This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
There are 62,517 refugees in Greece. There is a distinction between the islands and the mainland. At the islands, there are 16,582 refugees. Their capacity is around 7,500. And the largest number of refugees are in northern Greece.
That's reporter Mariana Karakulaki, who says Greek authorities are not yet prepared to care for over 60,000 refugees during the winter. Details coming up. Also, 18,000 Somalis repatriated from Kenya's Dadaab refugee camp this year have returned to the Somali port town of Kismayu. And 350 Japanese peacekeepers arrived in Juba today to join a 12,000-member UN mission in South Sudan. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, according to the UN Refugee Agency, about 18,000 Somalis repatriated from Kenya's Dadaab refugee camp this year have returned to the Somali port town of Kismayu. Many, however, are finding it hard to pick up the pieces of their old lives. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Kismayu.
This woman, talking with her mother, returned to Somalia after spending years living at the Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya. Life hasn't been easy because they don't have a home of their own.
I spent 2 days and two nights in the Kismayo Transit Center. I left the center and moved to the city, to a relative's house. We don't have a home here. I still live with relatives.
More than 18,000 former residents of Dadaab have come back to Kismayo since Kenya indicated last year it will close the camp, which used to house more than 300,000 Somali refugees. Most of the returnees have ended up in camps like this one, with no essential services. Ibrahim Hassan, a returnee and a father of nine, bought land in Kismayo to start a new life, but it turned out the person he bought it from was not the genuine owner. Authorities evicted him after he built a house.
I was compensated with another piece of land.
It's disheartening for a refugee and a young man like me to be evicted from his original home. It's still a difficult
home.
Authorities in the Jubaland region have refused to accept more returnees. Mohamed Noor, the vice chairman of Jubaland's Refugee and IDPs agency, says life has been hard for the returnees.
In Somalia, the basic services are not there. Most of the returnees are living with the IDPs. Some cannot pay their rent. Some are living with their relatives as they try to adapt here. These people need assistance.
This week, the Kenyan government postponed the closure of the Dadaab camp for 6 months, saying it will give time for the situation in Somalia to improve before more refugees are sent home. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Kismayo, Somalia.
A force of 350 Japanese peacekeepers arrived in Juba today to join a 12,000-member UN mission in South Sudan. The new development of engineers and construction workers replaces another Japanese force with one difference. The new force has a mandate to use force if necessary. The UN mission in South Sudan has been criticized for failing to protect civilians from attack by armed combatants. 5 months ago, two Chinese peacekeepers died and five others were wounded in Juba after their vehicle was struck with a rocket-propelled grenade. As winter approaches, Greece appears ill-prepared to care for the tens of thousands of refugees on the mainland and the Greek islands. Most are Syrians who had crossed from Turkey. Official camps are not ready for the cold weather, while detention centers for those who arrived since March are overcrowded. Starting last March, under a deal between the EU and Turkey, any new arrivals are detained and could be sent back to Turkey. Reporter Mariana Karukulaki is following the story from the port city of Thessaloniki. She spoke to VOA's Jodi Kapua.
There are 62,517 refugees in Greece. There is a distinction between the islands and the mainland. At the islands, there are 16,582 refugees. Their capacity is around 7,500. And the largest number of refugees are in northern Greece. The distinction between the islands and the mainland is because of the EU-Turkey agreement, because everyone that arrives in the islands is not allowed to come to the mainland.
Well, let me ask you first about the islands. They're way over capacity as far as the refugees go. How are Greek authorities dealing with them?
They are not. The Minister of Migration was supposed to visit the islands at some point, I think last month. But because of the EU-Turkey agreement, the refugees at the islands are not allowed to come to the mainland. As far as I know, some unaccompanied minors came to the mainland. But if they arrive in the mainland, they will not be distributed in the open camps all over Greece, but they will go to detention facilities because these are people that arrived in Greece after the EU-Turkey agreement on March 20th.
Now, the islands are over capacity, so how are they handling the refugees? Where are they putting them?
There are the facilities that used to be hosting facilities, and they stay there. The facilities now have become detention centers, so these centers that are over capacity. In the latest statistics, it is mentioned that some organizations, such as the UNHCR and other state-run facilities, have been set up in the islands, but their capacity is around 3,500, which is not enough.
While we're on the subject of the Greek islands, I understand there was an attack against some of the refugee camps there on a particular island. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, there was an attack on Chios Island at the camp called Souda. A group of what we know now, a neo-Nazi organization, which is also a member of the Greek parliament, attacked the camp and injured several refugees. They threw huge stones and they also threw Molotov bombs, from what I've heard. A woman lost her babies because she was pregnant, and one man was severely injured. This attack lasted for 2 days in a row. The leader of the neo-Nazi party actually claimed responsibility of the attacks during a speech inside the Greek parliament a few days ago.
Were there any arrests made?
As far as I know, no, there were not any arrests. It is a bit odd when it comes to Golden Dawn, because this is the political party we're talking about. They have, in a way, the protection of the police. When they attack people, they usually are not arrested. And if they are arrested, they are simply detained and then they are let free. It's a rather complicated political issue.
Let me ask you now about the migrants and refugees on the mainland. How are they getting ready for the winter?
In theory, the winterization of the camps has already started. But it started a month ago. The camps are not ready. I have visited a few camps last week, and I plan to visit some others this week as well. But the camps are not ready. In one camp, the UNHCR installed ISO boxes, which are being used instead of tents. These ISO boxes have air conditioning inside, but there is no electricity in the camp that can hold the power of the air conditioning. So people are left out in the cold. And this week we have good weather. For example, in the day it's 15 degrees Celsius. But in some areas, like the one specific camp, the Yazidi camp, which is on the Mount Olympus, the temperature can go below zero.
Now, Greek authorities have been getting these camps ready since the beginning of the year, I believe. What is taking so long?
The Greek authorities were warned by several people and organizations that they should start the winterization, as they call it, of the camps. But their reaction was that it was too early. When people were warning them last March, for example, that they should start constructing the camps, they just ignored everything. And now we are in the beginning of the winter, and the camps are not ready, and people are suffering. And it's not only the camps, there are also refugees that are sleeping on the streets, and there's no preparation for them either.
That's reporter Mariana Karakoulaki. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua from Greece. The Zimbabwe cash crisis has forced some people to sleep outside their banks. They want to be there early enough in the morning to withdraw cash to buy food and pay the rent. These include mothers who huddle with their babies to keep warm. From Harare, Kudze Zivansivashi reports on new rules at Zimbabwe's banks.
It's 9 o'clock in the evening, and it's business as usual in downtown Harare. A few blocks away in the banks of the Central Business District, people are getting ready to go to sleep on the sidewalks in front of their banks. They will sleep in rows that will become the queues that lead to a bank's front doors. In the morning, bank guards will give them numbers that will determine if they can withdraw any money that day when the banks open for business. Stella Murewa, a mother of three, says she left her children home so she could spend the night outside the bank. She looked up at the dark clouds that threatened to turn her night into a rainy one.
We are sleeping at the bank line because we'd like to get a number, almost first numbers, so that when the bank is opened, we'd be at the front. We just get even that $30 or $50, whatever money that is given there.
Most of the queue is made up of civil servants and pensioners hoping to get a bit of money. Others are Zimbabweans who are self-employed. Temba Dube, a self-employed Zimbabwean, says this has a bearing to his productivity.
It's very inconvenient in terms of the time that you have to spend in a line. That's all time that you could be using to actually create work for yourself. So, you know, it affects your time and also your productivity.
The crisis is a result of several factors. Zimbabwe is a country that imports more than it exports. Add to that criticism being directed at the finance ministry by citizens who accuse the government of bad financial management. Murewa says this has made life difficult with no way out.
The situation is very stiff, but we don't have option. We just have to sleep at the bank so that we can have that money to buy our groceries at home, to pay school fees for our children.
As a solution, the government has decided to introduce the bond notes, a surrogate currency that will be equivalent to the American dollar and only circulate within Zimbabwe. Murewa is one of the people who think this will solve the cash problem.
We would consider that the bond coins, should come in use so that the circulation of money could be easy. Money could circulate from one person to another, because the US dollars are scarce.
The past few months have seen banks reducing cash withdrawal limits from $10,000 to a paltry $100 or less, depending on the banks. The people that spend the night outside the banks have sometimes had to go home empty-handed after being notified the bank is not expecting any money that day. Some critics share the view that the announcement of bond notes sent people in a panic to withdraw all their money in American dollars. The wounds are still fresh after the government wiped out people's bank accounts when the government changed its currency to US dollars in 2009. Zimbabweans have been torn between embracing the new bond notes or rejecting them. Some activists have been planning a series of demonstrations against this proposed surrogate currency. The government has been backtracking on the introduction of bond notes. The date of the launch keeps getting pushed back. Now they say they will need to build public awareness of the value of bond notes along with its security features. This is Kudzai Nawashi, reporting for Voice of America from Harare.
You are listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. 18,000 Somalis repatriated from Kenya's Dadaab refugee camp this year have returned to the Somali port town of Kismayu. and 350 Japanese peacekeepers arrived in Juba today to join a 12,000-member UN mission in South Sudan. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Medical officials in the Libyan city of Benghazi report 2 dead and 17 wounded in a suicide bombing at a local hospital. A car filled with explosives blew up in the parking lot of Jalla Hospital today. Officials expect the death toll to rise among the injured. It's the third attack on Jalla Hospital this year. Libya's second largest city has been the scene of intense fighting between forces of General Khalifa Haftar and militants linked to the Islamic State. In advance of World AIDS Day, December 1st, a new report finds that more people with HIV than ever before are receiving life-saving treatment, leading to fewer deaths from AIDS-related illnesses around the world. Lisa Schlein reports from UNAIDS headquarters in Geneva.
The report says just over 1 million people died from AIDS-related causes last year, compared to twice that number a decade ago. UNAIDS says this is because of the large number of people with HIV, 18.2 million, who now have access to antiretroviral treatment. The agency also says the world is on track to reaching the target of 30 million people with treatment by 2020. Peter Geese is director of the UNAIDS Strategic Information and Evaluation Department. He tells VOA the disease can be conquered if the necessary investment is made in scaling up HIV treatment and prevention programs.
We estimate that if indeed, like, the funding is there and the coverage targets that are set out to be achieved by the year 2020, then that will lead to ending the HIV epidemic by the year 2030. If the money isn't there, then it is, like, almost impossible to achieve that end.
Currently, the agency has $19 billion to spend on HIV/AIDS annually. UNAIDS estimates it will need $26 billion for each of the next 7 years to achieve its goal of ending the epidemic by 2030. As in previous years, sub-Saharan Africa remains the region with the highest prevalence of HIV/AIDS. Geese says young girls transitioning to womanhood, particularly in that part of the world, are at high risk of becoming infected with the virus that causes AIDS.
There is evidence presented in the report that shows that young women between the ages of 15 and 19 represent a very large majority of new infections in that age group, ranging up to 90% in some studies in Southern Africa.
Gee says these young women usually do not know they are HIV positive, so they do not get treatment and are likely to spread the disease to others. The report finds nearly 37 million people are living with HIV, and worldwide, 2.1 million people became newly infected in 2015. It says there have been no declines in new HIV infections among adults since 2010. But the report notes new HIV infections among children have decreased by 50% since 2010 to 150,000 last year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Macular degeneration is a leading cause of vision loss among people 50 years of age and older. British scientists are using infrared light to treat it, but they've discovered the treatment may also help honeybees that have been poisoned by insecticides. VOA's Kevin Inikis reports.
Professor Glenn Jeffrey from University College London says this simple device can help people who suffer from macular degeneration, a leading cause of vision loss among older people.
We actually take a very, very simple device that's extremely economic, and all we ask people to do is actually to put it over one eye for 1 to 2 minutes every day. We find that there is an improvement in vision, particularly your ability to detect a very, very small light in the dark.
But one day, Jeffrey got to thinking about how colonies of bees are dying, partly due to poisoning by a class of pesticides called neonicotinoids, and he decided his therapy might also help them.
One of the ways in which these insecticides work is that they take the energy out of the cell. Every cell has a series of batteries in it called mitochondria, and what they do is they discharge the battery so that the battery has got no energy for normal metabolic function. Now, one of the things that this red light does is it's absorbed by the battery, and as it absorbs the red light, so it actually increases the output of the energy of the battery, and so we can use that to restore some of the function of the cell.
So he started shining infrared light on bees that had been poisoned with a neonicotinoid called imidacloprid.
In the colony that hasn't had the light, the animals are rather grey, they're pasty, and they move around in balls. If you look at the group on the other side that's had the 670 nanometer light as well, you find they're moving around in a relatively normal way, they're beating their wings, and we can't tell the difference between those and bees that haven't been poisoned.
Jeffrey says this is an easy fix to a huge problem threatening the world's honeybees.
This is actually a very, very cheap thing to do. It really should be a matter of £15 or £20 because we can just insert LEDs into the hive.
It's cheap, easy, and Jeffrey says the bees can't even see the light, so it doesn't affect their behavior at all. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports and tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next on Let's Talk, sibling rivalry.
We share the same last name and the same color eyes, but we fought like tigers over that old red bike.
Do you believe it exists? How about the brotherly love? Is it immortal? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing sibling rivalry. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Joyce Banda, the former president of Malawi. She'll discuss what Africa can learn from the U.S. elections and the peaceful transition of power from one leader to another. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Van Dyke, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.